Moncrief on News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. It is that time of the week when we remind ourselves that kids are great. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
That's certainly the mantra in mind.
Yes, that's it. Here's the first question. My 12-year-old daughter is not short of self-confidence. Her school principal suggests to me that I should let her experience disappointment. I think the principal is picking up on my daughter for no reason. I don't think there's any need to proactively disappoint my child, nor do I think there's any harm in sheltering her. But I worry if I'm perhaps being too overprotective and not able to see the wood for the trees.
Now, this one just feels like a snippet of a story.
Mm.
You know, when you're just getting a summary, like there's so much in here. The principal is picking on my daughter for no reason. Let her I feel like something happened before this.
Yeah.
And we're just getting this bit. But there's a couple of things. Look, self-confidence is good. Okay. I also wouldn't promote orchestrating a disappointment. You know, when this parent's saying, I don't want to proactively disappoint. No, of course not. Don't do that. I'm just wondering if the principal means don't rescue her from every disappointment. Rather than get out there and proactively disappoint her, is it perhaps, and again, I don't know the situation, but is the principal meaning, you know what, there are highs and lows in kids' lives, they have to learn to master tension, manage disappointment, don't jump in as a parent and rescue them from everything or sabotage a learning experience with a well-meaning fix or change agenda. That I can get behind. I understand that. And I think there's a lot of truth in that because the kinds of experiences that are, now we're talking mild to moderate, not crushing disappointments, by the way. But, you know, they're the experiences that really help our children to build capacity to master other challenges that are definitely going to present as they grow up and get old. It helps them to gain confidence, to develop independence, self-efficacy, to see when I'm out in the world and something doesn't go as I want it to, you know, I'll be able to cope with that and I'll bring it home to you then. But in the moment of it, I'll manage it. And I might be disappointed if something doesn't play out the way I want. But you know what? That's okay. Sometimes disappointing experiences are disappointing. So my being disappointed is really congruent and it's okay that I feel that way. And you can be with me in that feeling. Well, that must be very hard for you. How disappointing. I know you really wanted it to work out differently. You know, what did we learn from this and help them move on is different to let me go into the school, have a word with somebody and short circuit this experience for you.
Yeah.
Now, again, I don't want to say that's what this parent is doing because I really do feel like we have a snippet of a situation here.
Why is she talking to the principal at all?
That's the thing. Something has happened. So look, having a self-confident child, not an issue. Absolutely don't orchestrate disappointment. But try not to jump in and rescue your child from every disappointment. There is a lot of important pro-social learning in those experiences.
Yeah. And you can't really. And the longer you try to protect them from it, the more it's going to hurt them when they experience it.
And it just means if something, when something happens in school, they're a lot of hours away from getting back to you. And all it teaches children is I have to sit in this bubbling tension until I can get to you so you can come and fix it for me. What we really want is our children are able to regulate through those distressing moments, able to kind of go, okay, well, I'm not happy. What could I do about it? How can I deal with this myself? And then bring it home to us.
Mm.
But in the moment, be able to master the tension, at least somewhat.
Yeah. We're moving home this summer, and it means my youngest son is going to have to move school. The move won't impact my teenage children as they can get a bus to their current secondary school. As we are getting closer to the end of the school term, my son, who's 8, is getting very upset about having to move school, to the point where I've considered making the 1-hour round trip before work to drop him off in order to keep him at his current school. This simply isn't an option financially or practically. Do you have any suggestions about how to speak with my son about moving school, relax his fears about being in a new class and help him get over the upset of not seeing his current friends on a daily basis from September? I've told him the new school will be in the countryside and have a lot of space for him to play and that he will have new friends. But I feel all the conversations around moving are so daunting to him. Please help. I don't want him to be filled with dread the next 4 or 5 years. I was wondering if bringing him to the new school for a day is a good idea or a bad idea.
I mean, there's a little bit of overlap here because this is another one where, you know, when you say I've considered making a 1-hour trip so he doesn't have to move school, but it's not an option. well, then don't consider it because it's not an option.
Yeah.
So don't set yourself up to kind of offer something you can't deliver or even put yourself under that pressure. And this is another one where you want to respond to him with acceptance and empathy. You accept this is hard for him and you empathize with his struggle, but you don't get pulled into that rescue agenda again because he's struggling because this is a big change.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely makes sense to me. I would give him time to feel his way through this, and I mean literally feel his way through it. The feelings right now are dread, upset, avoidance, don't want it to happen, resistance.
Yeah.
But you do have 4 to 5 months before this full move has really happened into the new school. So allow him go through this, be with him in it. Now, you might want to consider something towards the end of this current school year, like all going to a public play area or something like that with as many of his class who can make it and have a little celebration or an end of year party that he's saying goodbye to everybody. So you mark the ending with some degree of closure in a celebratory way, like have them in a park, not, sitting around getting morose about it. I think as well in the meantime, if again, it's feasible for you to do so or if you can make it happen, take some photos of the new school, the outside of the building, not when kids are there, obviously, but at the weekend.
Yeah.
Wherever your new home will be, take some photos. The local shops, local resources or amenities, the local GAA club or football club, whatever it might be. And then make a Our Family Move scrapbook where you put in the photos and he can familiarize himself with new visuals of what he's going to be literally looking forward to. I might also suggest that you see if the new class that he's going into, and you can talk to the school principal in the new school, if they could send a card or a poster or a little video message, anything that's maybe a card is easier for them all to do, welcoming him ahead of time. That could be really nice as well. You know, that they could be saying, we're excited to have you in our class in September. And that's a way of him going, oh, other kids, new positive experiences. I mean, I do think, the question here, I wonder if bringing him to the new school for a day is a good or bad idea. I think it's a good idea, but not right now. I'd be waiting until end of May, mid-June, and go in towards the end of the year, rather than now when he's feeling quite negative and resistant about it and him going in going, oh, no, I don't like it. Maybe wait until closer to the time and see how he's feeling. But I think of paramount importance is empathize. This is a big change. Maybe sit around all of you, including your teenagers, prep them ahead of time just so they're on side with this one. But everybody share one thing that you're going to each miss when you move and two things you're really looking forward to and excited about. Okay. Allow him to miss something. You'll all miss something.
Yeah. This is, again, I suppose, not protecting them.
No.
You can't protect them from that disappointment. Yeah.
But you're allowed to say, oh, I wish we weren't moving because I really like this about where we live. And that's okay. That's valid. And then you could say, but I am excited about the promise of those wide open spaces to play in. And I am excited about whatever else it might be in specific to the area. But you all do it, not just him. And don't put him on the spot first. You offer yours. Everybody takes turns. I just think starting in that balanced way, but giving space for him to say, I'm really going to miss something or someone. That's important.
Is it? Because I noticed you said that the older ones are still going to go to the same secondary school.
Yeah.
So is it too much of a gap to say when you go to secondary school, you're going to see the people again from your original
I was
school.
Thinking that. And I mean, you could say that you'll see them in secondary school. It can feel like it's a long way off when you're eight.
Yeah.
And I mean, we might as adults go, those years will fly by, but he'll also have grown up and moved on a bit. So if there's any way of maintaining connection with special friends he has in his class, great. But again, I wouldn't force that because give him a few weeks, a term in his new school and see how he's doing. The move is happening. That's not changing. So really you're giving him space and time to feel how he is, to adjust, and you'll be there with him to support him through that.
Yeah. In the last few months, my 2-year-old son has started biting people. I have tried timeouts, early bedtimes, no screen time, no sweet treats as punishment. So far, nothing has made him stop biting. I must add that overall, he's an extremely well-behaved child. However, it has become a real issue in play school where he's biting anyone he can get his hands on. My mother says I was the same and she bit me once to stop me doing it and it worked, that I never did it again. Aside from that helpful advice, what are the solutions?
Don't do that. Let's get that out there. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Do you know what? There's a couple of things here. 2-year-olds biting, not a phenomenon. Like, yeah, this is really, really common. I totally appreciate it for anyone working in an early years setting going, oh, that's grand, Joanna, but we have to deal with the bitee as much as the biter. I totally get that. But children this age, they bite for two reasons mainly: to cope with a challenge or to fulfill a need. So with two-year-olds, you're talking about teething, frustration, limited communication skills. And in the place of being able to say, really upset that Jamie took that toy I was so desperately in need of, so I showed him my displeasure by biting him. They just go over and bite.
Yeah.
That's what they do. If you're teething and your gums are sore, flesh is just quite nice feeling for your gums or your sore mouth. So it's very, very common. The next thing, and again, I say that, I will kind of come back to what you can do. But what jumps out at me, Sean, is this bit about, I've tried timeouts, early bedtimes, no screen time, no sweet treats as punishment. With a two-year-old, you're driving yourself demented.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stop doing all of that. Because at 2 years old, this kind of behavior modification approach is way, way beyond his years. He has no way of associating your denying him these various things with his biting. No clue. He is absolutely not joining the dots. No matter how smart a two-year-old he is, that's not happening. Timeouts, again, you're asking a two-year-old to sit and self-regulate and calm themselves down to learn a lesson. Doesn't exist. Yeah. No two-year-old does that. So stop doing all of that stuff. And instead, you want to come back with a gentle yet firm no. So you're absolutely going to say no, no biting, no biting people. And then you're going to use redirection and distraction. Okay. Take his little hands in yours, you know, make little circles in, you know, sway them side to side. I always like to hold the hands of toddlers before you come down to their eye line, because otherwise you're at the perfect height for a punch, you know. So hold those hands, you know, it's regulating, but also it's safeguarding. And come slowly down and you look at him and gentle yet firm, no, we don't do that. No biting. So you're using your serious voice, but you're not cross or irate with him. Then bring him over, still holding the hands, to some task, block building, whatever it is. Get him engaged in it. Stay with him until he's calmer. You've got him back engaged and move away. That's what you're going to be doing at 2 years old, at 3 years old, right up to and including 4 years old, when he's able to do more cause and effect thinking, understand, oh, when I do that, the other person cries. Also, I would ask the creche to track if there's any pattern to it. You know, I know you're saying he's biting anyone and everyone he can get his hands on, but could it be when he's tired, hungry, or during transitions, coming in and out of activities? From outdoors to indoors or vice versa. See if there's anything there that they could anticipate. Okay, we know this is hard for him. He might bite around this time. And you could give him a kind of a safe chew thing that he can chew on, pin it to his little top, and he can chew those things, especially if it's teething is what I'm thinking, if he's cutting any back teeth. There are books, aren't there always? One is called Teeth Are Not For Biting. I don't love the title because teeth are for biting, just not people. But the book is better than the title.
Yeah, so poor syntax, great book.
Teeth Are Not For Biting. It's Elizabeth Verdick wrote that, and No Biting by Karen Katz are two good ones that are often recommended for this age group. They're fun, they're playful, but they have the boundary in place. But just don't do those behaviour modification things with him. He's not going to get it.
Yeah. My daughter, age six, likes to copy her friend's behaviour. This hasn't been overly concerning to date, but I'm wondering whether to bring her to a professional. She's usually a shy child, but some of her friends can be more boisterous, and I worry about their influences. My daughter has recently been a bit rougher around her little brother. How do I know whether it's just a phase or when I should look at getting a professional involved?
Okay, now don't panic about this. I mean, six-year-olds are growing, changing, developing. You know, her play patterns changing and becoming more physical and robust. Not a concern at all. So I don't think that's necessarily anyone's influence. I think that's quite developmental. And don't forget, children learn by mirroring. I love when somebody says, my child can copy or my child can mirror, because if you can mirror, you can learn. And that's a really positive thing. She has a little brother, but you know what? I think she may be looking much more to her peers because they're more like her.
Sure, yeah.
So she's seeing herself in them, and so she's taking her lead. You've a child you identify as shy. Her friends seem to be more boisterous, more active. So she is looking and saying, well, what would it be like to be like that? And maybe I'll try out some of those behaviors. Again, I think that's all really healthy, normal stuff. Mirroring you know, as a learning mechanism for young children, really is promoting learning. It creates a sense of belonging. It helps kids, well, adults as well, to be honest, but kids in particular, to identify themselves as part of a group. So if this is her group of friends and she's going, well, I do want to fit in. I like being around these kids. I like how it feels. I'm going to also take on these behaviors. Now, we do see children are more likely to mirror or imitate the behavior of their peers in particular, more than siblings, more than family members, because their mirror neurons activate much more when someone with similar characteristics to themselves is around. It's why little kids are so excited to see other little kids.
Yeah.
And at this age, you know, when they go to a public playground, kids they've never seen, they're like, oh, yay, a child. Mm-hmm. And they delight and light up and they can have those connections. It's a neural exercise that's going on with that. I think what I'd say to you, instead of worrying about her copying and what it might mean, I don't think, based on what you're writing in here, that you need a professional, but I would be looking at ways to build her confidence. Now, shy people can be very confident.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but if you're worried that she's not being herself, quote unquote, and she's taking on traits of others, focus on ways that you can build her confidence, giving her little chores and tasks, things she can be responsible for, praising effort over outcomes, celebrating who she authentically is with her. Those are ways you're going to build her confidence.
Just going back to, and actually, does a six-year-old even know who they are yet?
Not at all.
Yeah.
No, no. Can take us until we're 60 to work that out, Sean. Yes. But definitely not at six. And really, you're talking about kids under seven not having that self-regulation capacity. So they're very much developing systems rather than developed.
Mm,
so they will try out all kinds of behaviours, personas, attitudes, all of that. It's really normal.
Yeah. Just going back to biting, someone says, what do you do when a child continues biting? My son and countless others has been bitten by one child in the creche about a dozen times in the last 3 months. At what stage can you ask for a child to be suspended for the safety of your own? I was sympathetic at the start, but my understanding is limited at this stage.
Yeah, no, I get. And I imagine your creche is on that, to be your childcare setting is on that issue, because, you know, they're well, you know, it's a practice that if they can't manage the biting behavior and it is affecting loads of other children, there is a safety issue with that and a duty of care to other children. So I imagine the parents of the biting child have been spoken to about, you know, look, in order to keep the place here, we've got to work very directly on that. So I would say flag it to your childcare setting if you want, but I would presume they're already down that pathway with the other family. Yeah. They may not, I imagine they won't be able to discuss that with you, but you can certainly bring it up with them.
And someone else says, when my daughter was only a baby, we used to have the same no biting thing. But then one day we were out for a walk and she was in the buggy and she saw a young couple kissing and she shouted out at them, no biting! So you can do that in the future. Joanna, thanks a million.
Thank you so much.
As ever, Joanna Fortune, there you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.